want racism to stop, we need to think about the future. We need to think about the children we are raising now. We need to think, when we are a business, a company, we need to think about the people we are hiring and the people we are empowering to become leaders.
Magical greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the World It's Magic podcast, your weekly dose of magic. My name is Rubens, Director of Spells and Co-Founder at Abra Academy. Abra Academy believes the world needs magic, not only rabbits in hats, but the magic of people. We use magic to create learning experiences full of joy and possibilities, so that everyone can reach their potential. And talking about unlocking potential, our magical guest today is Victoire Mambala. And you ask me, how does she bring magic to the world? Well, on top of being a very successful professional, Victoire is head of EMEA marketing production operations at Netflix. She also has this great passion for mentoring others. So we're going to talk about her journey, her learnings, about positivity, racism, and how her story and role model can help others to grow and unlock their magic. But before we start the conversation, I would like to invite you to answer one quick question. What magical power would you like to have? It could be you want to heal the sick, or speak any language, or fly. I would love to time travel. Okay, let's start. Victoire, welcome, and thank you so much for joining and making the time for us to chat. I'm curious to hear about your passion. What makes your heart beat?
So what makes my heart beat is really, I will, as I said, mentoring people and really teaching. For me, it's all about sharing my knowledge. I feel that when I share my knowledge with someone, I empower them to know better and do better.
That's beautiful. And did you have a mentor yourself?
Yes, I did have, I do have a mentor actually right now. And I will say that through my career, I had several mentors. So they really accompanied me, you know, in my career progression and in my professional journey. So the first mentor that I had, her name was Michelle Nere, a fantastic woman, who was one of the pioneers in public relations and PR in France. And she was the one who actually gave me my very first job in PR, because this is actually how I started my career. So she believed in me, and she saw, you know, my potential when I sent so many of my CVs to big PR agencies, advertising agencies that were closing, you know, their doors to me because I was either too young or maybe too dark. So she gave me my chance, and while we were working together, she saw that I was really eager to learn more. So she will spend time, you know, sometime after work or earlier in the morning, she will ask me to come before anyone will join the company. She will ask me to come, and she will sit down with me and tell me, this, I'm going to teach you how to write a really excellent, you know, press release. I'm going to teach you how to do a perfect communication strategy. She took that time. It was, to me, like the first time I felt someone was really dedicated that time for me to empower me to know better. So that was my first mentor. And through my career, I had obviously other mentors. And the one that I have right now is really someone who helps me to, I will say, step back sometime from the situation I'm in, and help me to keep on focusing on my career growth, making sure that you know, I'm also accountable with the knowledge that I have, making sure that I continue, you know, focusing on my goals and I don't deviate from them.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And you also had some beautiful role models in your life. Can you share a bit about that?
Yes, I had some great role model. And I think I was asked actually this question last week ahead of the International Women Day. And my answer to that question was actually Soraya Bonaly, was a French figure skater. So she was actually the best in the world, the best in history. And she really broke the ceiling. She managed to really create, I will say, new technique for this sport. And despite being the best in a category, in a sport, she never won a gold medal at the Olympic Games or the World Championship. And this was something, you know, a role model I actually grew up with when I saw when I was little. And what I learned from her is that, yes, you can be the best in your category, you can be the best at what you do, but sometimes people, because they don't want you there, they're not going to give you the chance to win. But despite that, you have to be resilient. You don't have to give up. You have to keep on standing up and keep on, you know, pushing yourself to do the best and give the maximum that you can. So this one, Soraya Bonaly, is definitely one of my biggest role model.
Fantastic. And how did it change things for yourself, the mentorship you went through?
Mm-hmm. So the way the mentors that I had and the one I have changed things for me is that besides, you know, when you go to school and you start working, yes, you're learning, but they teach you about their story, they teach you their experiences. So the mentor, my first mentor, Michelle Néret, for example, when she was telling me about her experience, how it was difficult when she started a career, you know, back in the 70s, being the first woman in the country to have a PR agency. So all the barrier that she had to face. So to me, it was very important to hear those stories and get that experience from her, because I realized that she didn't win from day one. She struggled a lot. And by sharing her experience of struggle, she actually helped me to save time in making maybe sometimes, you know, mistake, but also countering those barriers that people were putting in front of me. So this is what mentorship is about. It's not just teaching someone, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It's actually teaching someone about, you know, fundamental things, you know. So it's this is why for me it's really important. And that's why I embrace, you know, mentorship.
Mm. So interesting. Is there an aspect of possibility in mentoring, opening up possibilities? Or like, I love that you said about the person being there for you, like also using, giving their attention to you. I think that that could be also very interesting to hear a bit about it.
Yes. So I will say, like, in my career, several years ago, I got to a point where I felt that I'd reached a ceiling, where I felt that I kind of like stopped learning. You know, you get to this moment where you're like, well, maybe I'm an expert. So, but what should I do with all that knowledge? What should I do with it? Should I keep on climbing? And I had that conversation with my mentor at that time, and he gave me that great answer. He was like, well, maybe if you have accumulated so much knowledge, maybe it's time for you to actually pass it on. So this is when, you know, I started mentoring people. So the first person I mentor was actually someone was working in the marketing industry, was considering, you know, going back to school to learn from a different field, but he was struggling to find, I will say, his way, and thinking about, you know, the next chapter of his career. So I started mentoring him, so working with him, also to set up his first business, which was actually a photography company. So I worked with him on this project, and I also, you know, help him to, as I said, not give him, you know, theoretical knowledge, but fundamentals. And to me, that was the first time I felt really more than useful. You felt needed. So it was really important to me. So when I started mentoring a first person, I was like, wow, maybe I can mentor another person and another one. But it's important as well to not mentor also too many people, because it's a lot of time and dedication and effort that you need to provide. So I always say, as long as you have maybe two or three person, you know, at a time, that's absolutely fine. And those are people that can come and go as well in your life. So sometimes you can work with them for like 6 months, 12, but then you can do a little bit of break because they also need to practice on their own. And then they might come back to you 1 year after, just to check up with you, share with you, you know, all the steps that they have accomplished and maybe seek more guidance. So I will say the mentorship relationship starts organically and also ends organically.
Petra, can you give motivation to people, or is it something that needs to be within?
No, you can definitely. And I think you see that, for example, if you think about, you know, just going to the gym, or a personal trainer will motivate you to just run on the treadmill. It's you can help people to get motivated if you're also in a good place, you know, in a good place in your life, if you have, you know, that positivity in you. Because people, you know, we always say that we feel over people energy. So if you're at a time where, you know, you felt that you don't want to focus on anyone else, you won't be able to like share that motivation. And to me, I have those moments sometimes in, you know, at work or in my day-to-day life where I feel that I start to be demotivated about, you know, certain projects. And I like to talk to people who can help me to like, you know, we can help me to be lifted again, but also motivate me to stand up and, you know, and keep on being motivated.
Yeah, in our previous conversation, we talked about the importance of positivity mm-hmm. and how contagious it is.
Yes, positivity is really important. And, you know, last year, 2020 was really difficult. We went through a lot when it comes to the pandemic, when it comes to the civil unrest in the US following the death of George Floyd, and also many of our, you know, Black citizens in the US. We started, you know, a lot of people started to work from home, went into isolation, confinement. It was really difficult to stay positive. And looking at it, I'm not gonna lie, but in the first months of the confinement, I find it really difficult to keep my high level of motivation and positivity. And I was just looking around, you know, like watching the news every day. It was just, you know, chaos all the time. More people dying, protests in the US all over the world, just more war, more insecurity when it comes to the economy. And I couldn't, you know, just believe that all these things were happening around me. And I was asking myself, what can we do to make things better? And I started, you know, to say to myself, what actually makes me motivated and, you know, give me that positive energy? And I remember that it was just, you know, knowing that when one good thing happened in the world, you know, during the day, I go to bed in a very, you know, I will say like a state maybe of euphoria, but I'm happy. And so I started doing this. I started, you know, to take action. I didn't want to let, you know, the chaos take over. So I started to take action. I started to get involved in like, you know, I will say like civil protest, you know, participating to the Black Lives Matter movement. I started also to participate to other movement to protect the LGBTQI community in Poland and Hungary that is currently facing a high level of discrimination. So just doing those things every day, although I felt that I was maybe the only one or we were a small group, I knew that something good was happening. And that's the thing that gave me that level of positivity. And by sharing my story, by telling others what I was doing, I felt that, you know, it started to be a bit contagious because my friends were asking me, how can I help you? What can we do, you know, to get involved? How can we do more? And, you know, that's how we started those little chain of people doing the same thing. And you just go to bed and you know that, you know, it's not just one good thing. It's multiple, a multiple number of good things that happen. And that's what gave me back my positivity last year. And this is why also this year, I am more than ready to face 2021.
Thank you. Hard question, but can we fix racism?
It's a hard question. I don't think we can fix racism, but we can reduce it. And, you know, talking about the events that happened in the US last year, and that continue actually to happen with, you know, Black citizens being killed by the police, by other people. When I was looking at those cases, I remember, you know, what happened in Los Angeles, you know, 30 years ago, when LA had, you know, riots after, you know, a Black truck driver was beat up by the police. And looking at this, I was like, here we are again, 30 years later, nothing has changed, because it's even worse. It's happening, you know, almost on a day-to-day basis. So if we want racism to stop, we need to think about the future. We need to think about the people, the children we are raising now. We need to think, when we are a business, a company, we need to think about the people we are hiring and the people we are empowering to become leaders. Because those ones will be there in 20 years or 30 years ago. And if my nephew and nieces work in a company in 20 or 30 years later, and they tell me, well, you know, on Victoire, I'm facing racism at work, I will feel so ashamed, because I will feel that, you know, I have failed in educating people, in building a better working environment, you know, for underrepresented group. So racism, I won't say that this is something that can be fixed with, you know, just like switching the light, but it can be reduced gradually. And I hope that it will disappear.
Thank you. You mentioned that your father was one of the first Black CEOs in France, like,
yes, yes,
back in the days, right? What learnings come from that space for you? Mm-hmm.
My dad started working, he set up his business in France in the 70s. So if you think about, you know, what a lot of like Black actors or Black politicians have to go through in Europe or anywhere else in the world, you know, in like in Occidental countries, imagine how it was in the 70s for my dad going into business meeting. And he was working in a very high profile field. My dad set up a business that was responsible to audit, you know, hospitals in France and also in other countries, you know, like Switzerland or Belgium. So going into walking into an hospital and saying, you know, to an hospital director, well, I am the person who's going to tell you if you're going to have a job in 6 months or not. People were, you know, quite shocked about seeing my dad, you know, as a Black person. So he went through a lot. He really went through a lot. And going back to the example I gave about Shoya Bonali, my dad had a very successful business. He was the best in his field, but he didn't get the reward. He ended up, in order for him to like grow his business, he had to merge his company with another company that was, you know, managed by, that was led by, you know, three white men. So that was the only way he could grow his business to get more investors. So that's what he had to do. So thinking about what he went through in the 70s, what I've been going through as well myself in my career, I don't see a lot of difference, unfortunately. And this is why I'm really taking a stand now, making sure that, you know, at work, in my network of friends or professionals, I'm really talking about racism. And I know that some people, you know, when you're a Black person, sometimes you're just tired to explain to others why this comment is racist or why this is racist. But we have to continue, because racism is still here. And if we want racism to disappear, this is an education we have to continue doing.
Yes. And you mentioned the importance of saying it out loud when you experience racism, right? How does it show in the day-to-day, this kind of behavior, if it were?
Yeah. So I think like when people experience racism, the first thing that you feel is that you feel anger, sadness, but you don't want, we have been in societies where we've been muting people who are talking about racism. And just to talk about the actuality right now with what happened with Meghan Markle saying, I was victim of racism. And 2 days later, you know, the media in the UK is saying, no, that is not racism. We are not racist. The royal family is not racist. We have someone who said, I am in pain. This is my experience. And I'm not asking you to say if it's right or wrong. I am telling you, this is what I'm feeling. So I appreciate what she did, and I encourage anyone who has been in that position to also talk, because this is how people will understand that racism is not just someone throwing to your face the N-word, but it's also with the attitude. It's also by putting barrier in your way.
Thank you, Victoire. And just a call for everyone, if you want to ask Victoire a question, please put in the chat. We don't have too much time, so better be quick. Victoire, talking about how can we take more control of our lives? There is so much going on and we easily get lost, right? Mm-hmm. How can we take control?
I will say you feel that sometimes you don't have the control on your life when you're actually holding on to things, you know. Just when I talk to people and always like, oh, I wish we could go back to normal, to where we were, you know, before 2020, when we could go out to bars and restaurants. And we're holding on to that. We're holding on to the past. And this is why some people don't feel that right now in that situation of confinement and pandemic. We're not in control. But we have right now a new way of living. We need to rethink that. And in order to be in control of your life now, you just need to think about, well, actually going to the bar was helping me to meet with my friends, you know, just relax from my day-to-day life. And it's just thinking about how can you recreate those moments in a different environment. So if we hold on to the past, we don't build our future. So this is how you can be in control of your life.
And just calling attention to a comment from Jackson in the chat. It's the fact that our lived experiences are not even being believed by people who categorically cannot feel racism because they are white.
Yes, yes. And it's always, you know, this moment where you say like, well, I know maybe you're not racist, but what you told me was racist. And in that moment, it brought me back to where I was when I was a little girl and people were saying those things, those bad things to me, you know, when people are saying to a Black woman, you're aggressive. This is a really sensitive term. You know, this is part of like all the stereotype racist people have been building around, you know, Black women or the angry Black woman, the aggressive Black woman. And when we hear those things, it just, you know, hurt us in our Blackness. Because I always say I said to one of the person, I can't see mentors also, who's actually a young Black girl. And we had that conversation last time. And I told her, don't be scared of showing your power or being a strong Black woman, because you have a lot of women right now in the world who are reading books that tell them, that give them tips about, you know, standing up in public, about giving their voice, about sharing their opinion. This is power, and the people who fear you want to take it from you by giving you that insecurity, by making you feel like, you know, that power is negativity. So you have to be in control of that and making sure that, you know, when you hear those type of comments, you actually leave them aside. And although it hurts in the moment, when I heard those things, you know, it hurts me in the minute, but then I always learn how to get back in control and understand that people are actually fearing my power. So we have to keep on standing strong.
Yeah. And on top of this outrageous racism that happens still very, very often, there is also this passive racism, isn't it? Like of shutting the door, not opening up a possibility. Is there this other aspect that's kind of silent, right?
Yes. And again, look at Saya Bonali, like the best in a category, the best in the world. She was doing backflip. She was doing, you know, the quadruple spin that no one could do at that time. She brought that sport to a higher level, never won a gold medal at the Olympic Games World Championship. she was only, people were only putting barriers in front of her, didn't open door to her. They were just shutting them. They wanted to demotivate her so bad she will, you know, quit that spot and say, you know what, I'm leaving. She stayed to the end. She stayed, you know, until she retired. She felt that, you know, she had done everything, but she didn't retire when she was, you know, 20 or 22. She waited until she was, you know, in the 30s and 40s. But this is something important. It's that if you're a Black person, you can be the best in what you do in your job, and maybe the promotions are not going to come your way. And this is sad. I know it is very sad. And what we need to understand is that this is when resilience plays a big importance. This is when also voicing our opinion plays a big importance. I always encourage people who feel in those positions that, you know, they feel that they are the best in their category, they are a Black person, but people are not giving them that opportunity. It's also thinking, maybe that place is not for you. And, you know, life is too short for us to give our power or energy to people who don't want it and don't deserve it. So sometimes it's not about, you know, quitting. It's just saying that place right here is not for me. I'm just going to maybe set up my own league, you know, where a league based on acceptance that welcomes everybody. And maybe that's what we should start doing. We should start doing and thinking about.
Thank you, Victoire. Someone, Teresa said, half an hour is not enough time. Do you mind if we stay 5 minutes longer?
Yes, of course.
Okay. And then Priya says, your courage is contagious, Victoire. So I want to know, how can we give more courage to people?
How can we give more courage to people? I will say it's like, it's really something that comes from within. People can tell you, well, if you're sitting in the middle of a crowd, you know, hundreds of people or thousands of people, and they will tell you, yeah, it's okay to stand up and, you know, and share what's on your mind. But sometimes, you know, you're just blocking yourself, you're restraining yourself from doing so. So it's just an exercise, and maybe on the moment you're not going to stand up straight away, but it's learning about, you know, just raising your hand and saying, I'm here. So courage, it's really something that it's about self-motivation. You have to exercise. And for example, when I think about my team, I always tell them, it's easier to present to a small group than a bigger group. But you will have one day to present to a very bigger group, to 1,000 people. And in order to get yourself ready, you need to use every day as an exercise. So every opportunity you have, you can take to present, to just, you know, create your presentation and share it with your teammate and then your department and then a bigger crowd. It just train you and help you, give you the practice you need to have the courage one day to present in front of 1,000 people.
Thank you, Victoria. It's time for the magic questions. Are you ready for them?
Yes.
Okay, I know you're a believer, but what's your superpower?
Wow, I will say my superpower is probably my superpower is probably, yeah, it's definitely mentoring. It's something, you know, that I don't feel, you know, when I was little, I knew I would be a mentor one day, but it's something I'm passionate about. And, you know, when you are passionate about something, that becomes a power. So that's my superpower.
Fantastic. And Teresa is saying your positivity and energy comes over so well. You would be great to have as a mentor. So in case you need a mentee, you need to contact Teresa.
Yes,
and Desi, yes. The second question is, could you share a secret?
Yes, a secret that I could share about me or?
Yes, I mean, it could be about anything. That's a tough question, so that's why I'm throwing it to you.
I don't know. I could, one secret that I have. So, yes, I have one secret, one big thing. I was actually very shy. It's funny to read those comments, but I was actually very shy when I was younger, probably to my 20s. It was so difficult for me to like speak in class, you know, in front of people and even making friends. You know, I had my brothers and sisters. I was always friends with their friends, but I was so shy. And one of my secrets is that to overcome my shyness, I actually started to take theater classes. So it helped me to be put in that situation I would never wanted to be put in my life. You know, like for example, playing a child who's having a tantrum, or playing someone who's like overexcited in a supermarket. So all those moments. So it really helped me to break, you know, my shyness, and really helped me to discover, you know, to let the person I had inside speak up.
Fantastic. There is a question here from Charles. I don't know if you want to get into politics, but he says, your analysis of the racial question and intersectionality is today cataloged in France as being Islamic leftism, Islamo-gauchisme in French. What do you think of the intellectual and political situation in France and the porosity between Macron and the extreme right? I mean, I will let you,
yes. So in France, what we need to understand is that, like any other countries, politics became, you know, some type of business for some people. So, you know, some people, when they want to make money, they will think about, maybe I should, you know, open a lemonade shop, or, you know, a waffle shop or restaurant or something like that. And some politicians, so people who are passionate about politics, think also the same way. If I want to be successful in politics, I'm going to listen to the trends. So what are people scared about? What is the thing that, you know, prevent them to sleep at night, losing their job? And why is it? Because they think that, you know, if overtake their job, they will be jobless, etc. So those people are just creating more fear. They're just, you know, surfing on those trends, listening to what people are sharing on social media, and just building their program based on that. And this is what's happening in France. We have people who are unfortunately using xenophobia, Islamophobia, to build a program and thinking that they can win the election. But the problem is that maybe for them it's a game. We were talking about real life. We're talking about, you know, creating so much fear that it can, you know, lead to someone being killed. It can lead to someone being jailed for no reason. It can lead to someone not being given an opportunity to work in certain companies. So this is my thought about, I will say, politics, you know, in France, but also everywhere, especially in Occidental countries that are facing economic crisis. You will always have a politician who will come up with all those, you know, speech on fear and creating more fear on people.
And before the last magic question, Roberta is asking if you have any book recommendations on mentorship.
Yes. So one book that I can recommend actually is one book that I read. I'm trying to think in year, but it was 10 years or even probably 12 years ago when he released it. So I don't know if people know Guy Kawasaki, but Guy Kawasaki was the former communication guru of Apple. And Guy Kawasaki wrote a book that is called Enchantment. And he gives, you know, advice to people who are, you don't need to be a CEO to read that book, but it was mainly dedicated to CEO or leaders. But he gives really good, like, you know, business advice on like how to face, for example, adversity at work, how to be more creative. And he shares his experience, you know, at the experience he had at Apple. He's a really great person. So I really encourage you to read that book. It's called Enchantment, The Art of Changing Hearts and Minds.
That's beautiful. A book that you read 12 years ago. Imagine the power that stays, right? Thanks. Victoire, now it's time for you to have a magic wand. Imagine an imaginary magic wand. You can do anything you want in the world. You can create anything. What would you do?
If I could create anything, I think I will... so it's because I've been actually supporting the LGBTQI community a lot since I was a teenager. And what I would love to create, if I had the magic power, is to create a shelter for all teenagers from the LGBTI community who are kicked out, you know, from their home by their families, just for them to have a safe place to live. So anywhere where someone, you know, end up in the street just because of who they love or who they want to be, I would love that to be able to create a shelter, a place where they could live and be safe.
Thank you, Victoire. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for sharing all these beautiful thoughts and being here with us. Big round of applause to Victoire.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for inviting me to this live webinar.
Whoa, what a learning. Thank you so much, Victoire. This is awesome. I hope you enjoyed the chat and learned something new. Please follow Abracademy on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram for upcoming webinars and podcasts. And to know more about what we do and how we can help bring more wonder to your organization. Also, subscribe to the podcast and unleash your magic.